Welcome back to Niners Sports Talk. I'm your host, Sam Perry. Co-hosting with me this week is Blake Rose. We're both here in Fort Worth, Texas, where the AAC Men's Basketball Championship is being played at Dickies Arena. Stars Men's Basketball plays tonight. But a lot to look forward to this weekend, a lot of news for Charlotte Athletics. Blake, thanks for coming out here today. It's an exciting time for both of us.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So we're just going to get right into it. We're going to start with men's basketball. They finished their regular season against ECU. They had a record of 19-11 coming into the tournament. They had a big win, 82-72 over the Pirates. Their outside scoring really shined in that game, which kind of been a flaw on the team all year. They haven't been able to hit their shots, especially on the road. That was a real big confidence boosting performance from behind the arc. And then Lukai Patterson, who missed most of the Rice game because of foul trouble and ended up fouling out of that game. He led the team in scoring with career high 27 points. Really big outing from him. Got some words from him from post game. We'll play here in a second. But Blake, I know you got the previews this weekend for the Niner Times. What do you see in this matchup tonight with him?
So these are a couple of the players that I think are going to need to do well to be able to advance to that semifinal round. First off, junior forward Igor Miličić Jr. He continues to dominate both sides of the ball, even as the season is wrapped up. He leads the team in 3-point shooting and rebounding. He's made 54 total threes this season on 37.8% shooting from beyond the arc. So he is our go-to guy on offense for being able to knock down a quick three. He loves that corner three, and our guards can typically get the ball to him in that area of the court. On the opposite side of the ball for him, he's grabbed a total of 246 rebounds, and he averages a stellar 8.2 rebounds per game. Another player that's similar to Miličić in 3-point shooting would be graduate forward Robert Braswell IV. He's another player to keep your eye on during the 49ers' first game of the tournament. Off the bench, Braswell has been able to provide 11 points per game on 75% shooting from the field and 60% shooting from the three.
Yeah, it's going to be a tough matchup tonight. Temple, we saw this with the women's team last weekend, but Temple got that first round win. They're going to ride some momentum coming into this game. And Charlotte's had a week off. Can get rusty. So it'll be interesting to see how Charlotte responds in this matchup, riding that wave of momentum, ending the season with two wins, where they addressed some of their flaws. When they beat Rice, they had the rebounding figured out. And then when they beat ECU, the 3-point shooting is figured out. So if they can keep playing like they played to end the season, could make a good run here with some big upsets already happening with Memphis falling and SMU falling in this tournament. A lot to be excited for them as they try and make this historic run with Coach Fern's first season. Then we got some more words from Coach Fern from post game against ECU looking into this tournament coming up right here after we have Lukai's audio from that game as well.
Just like that, we're playing good ball right now, man. Igor just had 27 the other night. Happy that he had his career high too. Good night. My teammates finding me, but believing in me and trusting in me, man. And I couldn't do it without them. It's good, man. It's not as hard as on us. 3 games in 3 days. I mean, that's still gonna be hard. Don't get me wrong, but just to have that double bye and just to get more rest, get our body more rest. Is a big time thing, and us first year in America, and, finishing third is really big time for this program. So I'm just happy, to see the growth in our program from the CBI to come in here and finishing third in a top seven league in the country.
Well, yeah, I mean. Nobody at the start of the season really knows how good teams are going to be. So all those preseason predictions are whatever. But, I think it shows I've always been a massive believer in, what you achieve during the regular season probably doesn't get recognized enough for what you really achieve through those months of practice and preparing and performing. And I'm not sure, in my personal opinion, if you win your conference – you win your regular season conference, you know, championship, then to me you should go to the NCAA tournament. That's my opinion. I think it rewards your longevity in, during the season. And but for us to be third, we're really proud of the guys. You know, we're a game away probably from being second, and not that far from first, you know. But also the flip side of it, you could also finish 8th, 9th, and 10th in this league. That's how good it's been. So I'm really proud of the guys. Just prepare. You know, that's what I said to them. We just got to make sure we prepare really well and individually and collectively and be sharp and clean up some stuff that we're not great at. And then we'll find out who we play Thursday at some point to go play them Friday. And it's going to be a tough one.
And then shifting gears to women's basketball, their season has officially come to a close. They lost their first game in the American Athletic Conference tournament to finish the season with a 16-15 record. They lost to Tulane 65-52. The Green Wave really just controlled the inside in that game. They out-rebounded the 49ers by 14, and they outscored them by 14 with 34 points in the paint in the game. But that was a glaring issue in that game, but the biggest issue was Charlotte just couldn't hit any shots. They shot 25% from the field. Coach Karagiswego wasn't very happy at the end of that game, but he always talks about all year hoping to grow from every game, win or lose. It's supposed to be growth from the team. So here's some audio from her post-game on what she hopes the team grows from for next season out of that loss to Tulane.
I hope it motivates us. You know, because we did have some really great moments this year and we did play really well in some games. And then we had games where we didn't. And I think the potential of this team is there if we can get everybody connected and on the same page and move forward for the right reasons. And so I really hope that the biggest thing we can learn from this is that, you know, we can grow and get better. And that we will be motivated because, you know, obviously being our first year here in the American, I think we showed that we belong. We didn't do that today, but over the course of 18 games, we showed that we belong in this league and that we can compete with anyone. And I hope that will, again, motivate our team to continue to get better moving forward.
Heading over to baseball, the 49ers dropped their series to Maryland. On Friday night, they set a season-high 19 strikeouts against the Terrapins. Defensive errors did cost them the series and some dropped fly balls out in the sun or there on Sunday in the doubleheader.
Yeah, Blake, defensive errors were a real problem that weekend, and we saw that carry over into the midweek matchup with Winthrop for both Charlotte and the Eagles. They combined for 7 defensive errors, really costly in that game. Charlotte was able to win that game 11-8 in a big slugfest. So the errors ended up not costing them. It really cost Winthrop because in that 7th inning, Charlotte scored 2 runs on wild pitches and then a 3rd run in that inning to take a 10-8 lead on a throwing error. So Charlotte's not really mitigating their errors, but they're just finding ways to capitalize on the other team's errors more right now. That's something for a team that is always preaching pitching and defense, something you really need to figure out because conference play is right around the corner. It's next week. They're going to be at FAU for conference play, but in that game, one of the relief pitchers, I know I talked about Tony Rossi last week. He's having a great season. Got a feature story in print this week with Niner Times on him. But A.J. Wilson, another reliever who's battled back from some injuries, he had a great game throwing 2.2 innings in relief. Gave up no runs, got the win out of the pen. Really good performance from the lefty. He's been really key for them out of the bullpen this season. Then Charlotte hosts UNCW for a 3-game series this weekend for their final non-conference season of the year. The Seahawks are 9-8 on the season, coming off a tough loss to East Carolina this week, losing 8-7 in extra innings. So it should make a really good, tough contest for both teams this weekend as they prep for conference.
Softball opened up their conference season recently with a series win against South Florida. Their AAC debut also featured their very first win over the Bulls after falling 12 games in a row. In other news, a big win over number 12-ranked Virginia Tech gives them their 3rd top 15 win of the season. Ariana Rohde hit her 8th home run in this season over the Hokies. Sam had the opportunity to interview Rhodey this past week, and here's what she had to say about her early season success.
It meant a lot. I'm truly honored that I was named the number one first baseman in the country, but honestly, it just makes me want to keep working harder. It's a monthly award, so my goal is just to keep pushing and try to stay on the rankings for every month, and it's just really good motivation to know that people are seeing the recognition of the hard work I've put in, but also the recognition of the team itself with the hard work that we've all put in. I took a lot of time to develop my mental side of the game. I had a lot of growing up to do from my freshman year and my sophomore year. The physical side I knew was going to come along just with age and getting used to the practices, the games, and all the physical demands. But my mental side, just knowing that you're going to have failures at this high of a level, and how to persevere through the failures, and that everything's going to be okay if you failed. You just got to keep pushing through, and it doesn't have to be, you don't have to press the panic button always. I mean, it was a game full of roller coaster moments. So in the moment, we were just trying to stay cool, calm, and collected. And then once that last out was made and we won, then we were able to let the emotions come out. And it was just so ecstatic, and it was electric, and everyone was just so happy. And we knew that all the work we put in from the second we stepped foot in August all the way through, it was starting to click for us. And people started to realize that we are good enough to hang with any team in the country. So I think that first win, especially against Florida State, was just an eye-opening moment for a lot of the newer girls for us.
And once again, that was Ariana Rhodey talking about her success this season. She's really been a really shining star for the team with her 8 home runs on the year. A lot of them coming in clutch situations. But shifting gears, another Charlotte player who has really stood out, Riley Feltz from Charlotte's track and field team. He set the school record for the pole vault with 4.5 meter clearance in the NCAA Indoor Track and Field Championship. She came in second place in the pole vault. Really big moment for her and for the school as a whole. She was named a first team All-American. So congratulations to Riley Feltz for that big accomplishment for the program and for herself individually as they wrap up indoor track and field this season. Now shift gears towards professional sports. The NFL free agency period really just opened up a lot of massive moves. Me and Blake are going to talk about some of our favorite moves we've seen thus far and our teams that we think have really improved the most this offseason. So, Blake, who do you want to start out with talking about?
So, first off, the biggest, arguably one of the biggest trades that we've seen so far and biggest free agency signings that we've seen so far during this free agency window was Kirk Cousins headed to Atlanta from Minnesota, where he spent significant time leading their offense. So seeing Kirk Cousins go to Atlanta for 4 years, $180 million with $100 million guaranteed. What this means for both the Vikings and what this means for both Atlanta is that the Vikings will need to fill that hole that Kirk has left in their in their offense. And then going forward, they're going to need to find, hopefully, to pair with some of their younger offensive players, that they'll need to find a younger and more agile quarterback going forward. What it means for Atlanta is that they now have a veteran and a seasoned quarterback that they could potentially develop a guy around and let watch and kind of shadow Kirk Cousins, like we've seen with a couple of other quarterbacks and other programs. And it allows them to get Kirk at the end of his career for these next 4 years. So the Packers brought in Josh Jacobs on a 1-year deal, $11 million contract from the Las Vegas Raiders. And then in return, the Packers cut their current star running back, Aaron Jones, and the Vikings later picked him up on a 1-year, $7 million contract. Now, what this means, especially for the Packers, is that they're bringing in a younger guy who has been productive in both years, and they're kind of straying away from the injury that has plagued Aaron Jones for the past 3 seasons. Now, Aaron Jones wasn't ruled 100% out for any of the past 3 seasons, the 2021, 2022, or 2023 season. He did play games in all three of those seasons. However, he never played a full season, and that is mainly what the Packers were trying to stay away from, is that in the event that Aaron Jones is hurt, that he's of course aging, it's getting to the point where they probably need to bring in a new guy. And they also re-signed AJ Dillon, and so having Jacobs and Dillon being the new faces of the running game in Green Bay, we'll see how that turns out for the rest of the season. So Sam, what are some of the free agent signings that stand out to you?
I think the end of an era, sort of. Derrick Henry's officially left the Tennessee Titans, going to the very run heavy Baltimore Ravens team. Interesting to see how he does there. Now, they got that really good offensive line built for running, but they did just trade two of those offensive linemen to the Jets. Interesting to see how that line plays this season. And interesting to see how many touches Henry gets, because Lamar Jackson is the main key of that running game in Baltimore. So could be a good moment for him to try and latch on to get a championship. I was hoping to see him go somewhere where he wouldn't have to be used as much. Maybe not as much of a run-heavy offense, but Derrick Henry still, in my opinion, is one of the best running backs in the game. I would never want to attempt to tackle him in my life. But then there was a trade to me that really gives you a glimpse of what's going to happen at the draft this season. Everyone's been arguing whether the Bears keep Justin Fields and build around him, or they keep that first overall pick and draft Caleb Williams. Well, the argument to not draft Caleb Williams is to use that pick to take Marvin Harrison after trading back. But the Bears might have just made it public what they're doing. They just traded for Keenan Allen from the Chargers. Keenan Allen couldn't get a contract restructure done with the Chargers, so he got shipped out. Gonna be a new era there. They have a lot of offensive needs in Los Angeles, but the Bears now have DJ Moore and Keenan Allen as their top two wide receivers. Hard to find anyone else you would want to throw to. So Caleb Williams looks like he's going to be a Bear, and he's going to be walking into a great wide receiver room. And they also signed DeAndre Swift to lead the running game there. Interesting to see how that offense plays out. You know, the Bears haven't had a 4,000-yard passing quarterback ever. Could we see that next year with whoever their quarterback is? With those wide receivers, it's hard to not have that happen. But it'd be interesting to see there. Then look at the local team, the Panthers. They made two big trades. They traded away Brian Burns for a second-round pick and 2 fifths from the Giants, which the contract he signed for $30 million a year. I don't think he's worth that much money. So I understand them moving on from him. But what leaves a sour taste in your mouth is the trade offer they got, not this season, but the season prior, from the Rams, where they would have gotten 2 first-round picks and a second rounder for him. So tough for them. But then they went out and got them a wide receiver. They traded for Deontay Johnson from the Steelers, sending away Dante Jackson. Very confusing, all these names sounding similar. But they got them another wide receiver to pair with Thielen to help develop Bryce Young, see how he can progress in his second season. And then the Las Vegas Raiders went out and signed Christian Wilkins to pair up with Max Crosby. I don't know a single team that wants to face their defensive line right now. Going to get attacked from both sides, fast and strong. So interesting how Vegas does this year. Then one other thing I want to touch on in the NFL. Aaron Donald announced his retirement this morning. Kind of makes me feel old. He's been playing 10 years. Face of the NFL on the defensive side for those 10 years. So really good career from him. Kind of sad to see him retire. But, Blake, what does that do to the Rams as a franchise, losing out on that key defensive piece for them?
So I know that the biggest thing was that they finally reached a point, the Rams did, where Stafford, McVay, and Aaron Donald were all kind of on the same page. And that's ultimately what helped them achieve that Super Bowl. And I think that part of the reason why Aaron Donald might be more likely to hang up the shoes, hang up the cleats, is that he does have that chip in his belt, and that I think he has achieved, and most would say that he has achieved exactly what he probably achieved much more than what you would expect from a defensive player. I think he'll go down as one of the greats, if not the great, the greatest defensive player in NFL history. And it like you said, it is difficult to see him go, but I don't think it is too incredibly surprising. We've been battling with it, or with the idea the past couple of seasons that he might be hanging it up, and it is disappointing to see him go. I think that the Rams are going to need to kind of adjust, and that they're going to, if they want to keep contending, they're going to need someone to fill his shoes. I'm not sure who that would be with such a star player like Aaron Donald, but I think that ultimately moving forward, the Rams need to, you know, hold their heads up and continue to play good ball.
Yeah, you know, we saw last year in the draft, they know how to draft really well. They got some good defensive players and offensive players late in the draft. Now they're starting to get those. They traded all those first round picks to get that Super Bowl. Now they have first round picks again. See what they can build off of that. It's going to have to be a new identity on defense because you got their star player for the last 10 years gone. Offense really took a big step last year with Puka Nacua being outstanding in his rookie year. Stafford's getting healthy. So the offensive side seems pretty well adjusted and ready to go. See how they attack that defense. They just lost their safety, Kendall Fuller, in free agency to the Carolina Panthers. But is there any team that has stood out to you as a big winner in the NFL this year, in this offseason period?
Yeah, so in this free agency period, there was a couple of guys that went around that they were all kind of on the same playing field, is that there wasn't necessarily a team that I thought truly stood above the rest. I feel like many, many teams made good moves. I think Jacksonville brought in a good Gabe Davis, which, you know, Buffalo fans are excited for, but I think that Jacksonville needs some wide receiver help, however that comes. I think the Packers, they made some good moves to bring in. Even though letting Kirk Cousins signed to another team, I think bringing in Aaron Jones was probably a good idea. It would be silly to leave a name like Aaron Jones, healthy or not. It would be silly to leave him on the board. I think the Chiefs bringing in a little bit of wide receiver help in Hollywood Brown could possibly prove to be a key in potentially leading them to a three-peat. And then the Ravens, I think they made a great choice in bringing in Derrick Henry. I think that really fits with their offense that they're trying to go with. I think really in terms of the biggest winner, I think there were quite a few winners. I think possibly the biggest loser of the free agency period would be the Chargers, letting Williams and Keenan Allen walk. That's tough. That is your core offense. I mean, at this point, let Herbert walk, blow the whole thing up and rebuild. But we'll see how it goes. They're under some new direction with Harbaugh being now in the program. So we'll see where they go. But in terms of the biggest winner, I think there were quite a few winners, but definitely I think biggest loser or biggest, the team that took the biggest hit was definitely the Chargers.
I think another team that took a hit was the Cowboys. They haven't signed anyone that wasn't on their roster already. And the only person they have signed was the long snapper. They re-signed him. And just came out not too long ago, they released Michael Gallup. A lot of big moves not being made in Dallas right now. But two teams you didn't touch on, I think, deserve a little love for their approach this offseason. It's been the Texans. They went out and got Joe Mixon in a trade. They got Daniel Hunter from the Vikings in free agency. They re-signed Dalton Schultz. Him and Stroud played together. And when you have a young quarterback, you can get a tight end they agree with really well. Nothing's more valuable, in my opinion, which I think is the Panthers' biggest problem. They don't have a tight end for Stroud right now. That's something they need to address. But I think Texans made good moves for their second-year quarterback. And then talk about the Eagles. They signed Saquon Barkley. That was a big move, signed Devin White, and they just traded for Kenny Pickett. So they got some backup in case Hurts gets hurt. No, no pun intended. But they made some big moves to grow that team and take things in a little different direction there, but overall, a lot of teams made smart moves. As a Bills fan, I'm still mourning Jordan Poyer not only being released by us, but now he's a Miami Dolphin, so It's gonna be a tough season for me seeing him in that hideous uniform. But shifting over to hockey, I said it last week, if there's any moves made by the Hurricanes, we're gonna talk about it this week. Some big moves made from them in the trade deadline. Blake, what did you see from those moves, and what does this tell you about the state of the franchise right now this season?
Yeah, so the first move that stood out to me was the Hurricanes bring in forward Jake Guentzel and defenseman Ty Smith from the Pittsburgh Penguins in a trade package highlighted by forward Michael Bunting and two conditional draft picks leaving Carolina. And what this means, especially in that last blurb there with the two conditional draft picks, which what that is telling me as a fan, and I know there was a couple of other moving pieces in there, but those were really the highlights. Is that they are kind of in a win now situation. They're trying to fill guys. They're trying to grab some forwards that can bring in some help. I know Andrei Svechnikov has been easing back into and seems to be back into a rhythm, but you just never know that some injuries can arise. And I know we've seen in playoffs in recent history of him getting hurt in the playoffs and then our playoff stock tanking and the Stanley Cup hopes kind of slipping away there. And so I think bringing in more forwards that can allow for some higher scoring and potentially some better help in injury help going forward will be smart, because from what I'm seeing right now in Carolina is that they are in that our window is now, and our window has been now for the past couple of seasons. And that I think moving too many pieces out of Carolina is probably not the smartest idea when they're gelling as well as they are right now. But I think that the moves that they've made and the move that we'll touch on in a second is, I think both moves were smart and they are both win now moves as well. They are not necessarily building the future as much, but that's not the position that the Hurricanes are in right now. The Hurricanes are looking to win a Stanley Cup this season. They're looking to win a Stanley Cup next season, and potentially in that 2025-2026 season, that they're potentially looking to win or contend in all three of those seasons going forward. Much after that, who knows? But as of right now, in the foreseeable future, they are in a win now. And so the draft picks and stuff that they have been adding in some of these trades have definitely sweetened the deal for them. And for them, moving on from those picks and getting rid of those picks is not as much of a struggle if it would be for a team who's trying to rebuild.
Yeah, that Guentzel move, you're giving up four players and two draft picks for a guy who this is his last year on his contract. So big move, trying to swing for the fences this year, see what they can get. And that move and this next move I'm about to touch on just screams playoff experience. They went out and got guys who have been a part of teams that have won the Stanley Cup, who knows what it takes to that long grind, because hockey playoffs are one of the longest playoffs in professional sports. It is a grind, and those guys know how to do it. They can coach up the younger guys who haven't made that big run yet. But from the Washington Capitals, they got Evgeny Kuznetsov for a 2025 third-round pick. And Washington's actually retained 50% of his salary in that trade. I'm surprised to see the Capitals get rid of him, because when they made their big Cinderella run to win the Stanley Cup, he was their playoff leading scorer in that run, has the experience. The Hurricanes, one of their biggest problems in recent playoff years, having that guy who can close out the game with a goal, get the important goals in the playoffs. They haven't been healthy enough to have a guy to do that yet. He could be that guy for them. But really good season from them so far as it's nearing the end. They did lose to the Rangers on the 14th, losing 1-0. Really tough loss for them as they're trying to climb the standings. But still a bright future. Playoffs are looming. It's going to be exciting to see how they can perform in the biggest moments. But Blake, what have you seen from the Hornets recently? There's not much going on with them, but what have you seen?
So I know a lot of Hornets fans kind of discounted this season, and that they kind of said that the season was over. A handful of them thought it was over in November when LaMelo Ball got hurt again. But lately, it's been kind of the same old thing. They went on a little bit of a tear after adding Grant Williams and Trey Mann and Vasil Micic and a couple other guys that added to the team a little bit. And then they kind of went on a little bender there and started losing quite a few games in a row. And they turned it around the other night against the Memphis Grizzlies. Vasil Micic had his career high game for points, scoring 25 in their victory over Memphis. Other stars like Miles Bridges also had 27 points. And then much outside of that, off the bench, Grant Williams had 18. Brandon Miller didn't have a stellar game, but that's part of that's part of winning basketball is that Brandon Miller and guys like LaMelo Ball and Brandon Miller and Miles Bridges can't score 27 points every night. There's only one basketball. And so if you've got Vasil and you've got Bridges both scoring 25, 27, it's okay for Miller to kind of take the easy road and recoup a little bit. What is also good to note, or something to note, that is Vasil Micic did start this game, and Trey Mann started at the point guard position as well. So trying to get some of these new additions some starting minutes. I like that idea, especially while LaMelo Ball is still recovering. He's likely to not play for the rest of the season. It would be silly if they played him the last season with their record being maybe lackluster as some would put it, that putting him in these last couple of pity games would not exactly be the greatest idea. No one would want to see him get hurt again. And so given these guys like Trey Mann and Vasil Micic, who could potentially be backups next season if extended, could be a good thing, get them a little bit of experience late when the stakes are pretty low. So looking to the Charlotte FC in their most recent game on March 9th, they dropped a game 1-0 to Toronto. And what I saw mainly from this game was that Capetti had multiple great looks but didn't finish. For a guy that we're paying so much and is apparently the head of the team or the face of the team, with Soderski being loaned, it's difficult to see such missed opportunities from our supposed star player. The midfield looks decent, barring injuries from players like Ben Bender and Brant Bronico. Once we have some of those players back and playing consistent minutes, the midfield should be elevated even farther. They're creating great looks, and just capitalizing on those looks, I think, is the biggest thing, is that there were quite a few good opportunities, but none of them found the back of the net. And this loss wasn't, and the defense in this loss was not bad by any means. The goal that they did score was out of the box. It was unexpected. It was a complete screamer. And so it's tough to defend against those if you're a defensive player or if you're the goalie. That's just a tough shot to block. Creating looks, finishing, and better passing will be keys to success. But the defense so far has looked solid enough.
And their season just begun. A lot to look forward to as this team grows and develops with their new head coach. But some new additions will be joining hopefully late March, depending on visa stuff, as I talked on last week. But looking at Major League Baseball, opening day is next week, technically, with the Dodgers taking on the Padres in Korea, but we'll touch on that a little bit. But recent big news, Dylan Cease was traded from the Chicago White Sox to the San Diego Padres. Blake, what did you see from that move, and what can he do to help the Padres this season in a very loaded National League West division?
Yeah, so Cease has been pretty dominant. He finished second in AL Cy Young voting in 2022. He went 4-8 in his games that he played, with a 2.20. And what I saw mainly for it is that they kind of got him on a steal. For a guy that has, for many baseball fans, that Cease has been on their radar, but for many fans and many people outside of baseball, they might not have heard of somebody like Dylan Cease if they would have of a guy like Ohtani. He's not exactly the biggest name. And so I think that it was actually probably a steal that the Padres were able to get him this late and this close to the start of the season, is that a lot of teams are trying to figure out and trying to work with what they've got through this spring training rather than trying to add a ton of pieces. because they're trying to start getting in the rhythm now rather than trying to create a new rhythm. And so what I saw from it mainly was that the deal that they were able to snag Cease on is that they paid less for the trade package of 2 years of Cease than even the Orioles did for that was one of the biggest pitching, you know, acquisitions of the offseason, and one of the ones that has really stunned a lot of baseball fans, that they were able to get him less for 2 years. They were able to get Cease for 2 years for less than what the Orioles paid 1 year for Corbin Burnes. And I think a lot of that comes down to name, and that Corbin Burnes is a huge name in baseball, and Dylan Cease, I think, has flown under quite a few casual baseball fans' radars, or people who maybe don't follow the White Sox as much, or don't know of Dylan Cease and aren't as familiar with his game as they would be with a guy like Corbin Burnes. But I'm happy to see that the Padres were able to add a little bit of pitching after they lost a couple of pitchers this season in Hader and Blake Snell. And so rebuilding that bullpen is going to come down to whether or not they can pitch well and as well in swinging the bats as well. But we'll see how he develops the rest of the season, and I hope he has a great season with Padres.
Yeah, I think last season kind of hurt his trade stock a little bit, but from the reports I was seeing of what their asking price was for him, I was shocked to see how little the Padres had to give up. Because I was shocked at the Burnes trade, because the Orioles didn't give up much either. But they got 2 years now, team control with Cease. White Sox fans are kind of in shambles on Twitter right now about that, which reasonably so. They didn't get as much as thought they could get and expected to get. But
one last thing about that Cease trade as well is that from what I see a team like, and I think a lot of teams are kind of running into this issue or should be running into this issue soon, is that when you're that a lot of teams don't have much to give for these players. Is that in teams like the Padres, who they're shelling out so much money and so many prospects to get guys like Tatis and Machado and to keep them on your team, it's difficult to have that much star power on one team. The Dodgers are could possibly run into that problem soon. The Yankees could possibly run into that problem soon. The Astros, to a lesser extent, because they're because they don't have nearly as much star power. The Braves could run into that problem. Is that trying to keep all these guys as they continue to grow and as they continue to get better and as they continue to demand more money, it's refreshing to see a guy of Cease's talent, and even to a lesser extent, a guy like Burnes's talent, go to a smaller market team in San Diego or a smaller market team in Baltimore, that they're not the huge names that LA, that New York, that Atlanta is. It's refreshing to see a guy of that caliber go to some of these teams. And so that was one little thing that I wanted to add at the end, was that it's refreshing to see names like this not demanding demanding absurd amount of money, where we are shocked that they're asking this little. That's the lesser of the evils there.
Yeah, I'm going to be honest. I was a Dodger fan. I can't say this, but I don't believe small market teams are an actual thing. I think it's just cheap ownership, but that's my personal opinion on that. But you look around some free agencies, Blake Snell's still out there. Jordan Montgomery's still out there. Yankees need to add some pitching. Garrett Cole just came out. He's going to be out for a month at least. So I could see them being in the market for a lot of pitching. They gave up a lot of pitching to get Juan Soto from the Padres. But as we look to next week, opening day for the Dodgers and Padres, first Major League Baseball game, regular season game to be played in Korea. Game one is going to feature Tyler Glasnow versus Yu Darvish, the Dodgers' big pickup in Glasnow this offseason. Well, one of their big pickups in the offseason. Taking the mound for them should make for a great matchup. And then game two was scheduled to be Yoshinobu Yamamoto versus Joe Musgrove. I don't know if this Cease trade is going to impact who they start in that game, but baseball season's back. Exciting time. Ohtani's making his regular season debut in Dodger blue, prettiest color on the planet, and a lot to be excited for there. But that's all we got for professional sports. Just want to touch on, we are here in Fort Worth, Texas, covering the men's basketball team's championship run, hopefully for them. So follow along on Twitter for live updates from Dickey's Arena. It'd be a really exciting time this weekend to see how the team plays. Blake, thanks again for coming on. Of course, you're kind of stuck here with me too, so exciting for both of us.